Joy.
And I am Grecia. And we are
Basic Brown Nerds.
Hi guys, welcome back to Basic Brown Nerds. And today we have a special guest, Dangeli, right? That's how you pronounce your name. I looked it up.
Yes. You looked it up.
Well, I know you, I think you posted somewhere like how you pronounce it, because some people pronounce the Y like a soft, like Dangeli instead of Dangeli.
Yeah, definitely. My whole life.
So it's Grecia and Joy are here.
Hi.
I don't know, I've been following you on Instagram for like a while now, because I think we have an Instagram friend in common, Nico, who went to John Jay.
Yes, Nico.
Who we're actually interviewing later.
Yeah, so it's really funny.
Really?
Yeah, we're interviewing him in like right after we talk to you.
Okay, great. I see. John Jay gang.
Yes, for real. And well, I went to CUNY. Joy didn't.
I went to tech school in Rochester. I don't feel as cool anymore.
But so you started writing poetry just like 2 years ago?
So, I mean, I always wrote poetry. I was obsessed with like quotes and book quotes and songs and lyrics. Usually, like, I never listened to songs because of their beat. It was always because of the words. And I used to write poetry as a kid, but I kind of like left it when I entered academia and figured that, like, I don't know, I guess I thought poetry wasn't like a sustainable like hobby, I don't know what. And then I left it until like I went through a really, really bad breakup, and I just had all these poems in me. And I just started writing and writing and writing until one day I just, you know, a friend encouraged me to start an Instagram just for poetry. And I did. And that's how Afro Dominican X started.
So what did you study in John Jay? Because I know that you were thinking of going to law school. Is that what you were doing at John Jay? Did you do like a pre-law type thing?
Yeah, so I was pre-law since like sophomore year of college. My major when I first entered was criminology. I wanted to go into like the FBI or DEA or CIA.
Whoa.
Everything law enforcement, yeah. And, you know, when I started reading about the FBI and the CIA and the state, I realized that that's exactly what I didn't want to do. So I entered like the pre-law program on my sophomore year, and I changed my major to humanities and justice, which was like an interdisciplinary major with like literature, philosophy, and history, and just like basically theorizing on like justice. And I became a pre-law student as well. So like my mind was set. I wanted to be a lawyer before, like in high school as well, but something changed along the way, and I wanted to go into the FBI, and then something changed again. And then just, you know, dealing with, like, my undocumented status just put me on that path, you know. It was like I couldn't, it was, at some point, it was like I couldn't turn back, I couldn't leave the law, because it was a part of me at that point.
Well, so I remember, like, so a few weeks ago, I guess you posted how, you know, you were going to originally announce that what law school you were going to be going to, but now you put that you're going to move to LA.
Yes. So I actually applied to law. I took the LSAT. I applied. I got in. I got an $120,000 scholarship.
Wow.
To the top 18 law school in the country.
Damn,
so this was big, you know? And the whole time that I was getting these acceptances, like, my gut just kept telling me, like, I don't want to go. And it was a feeling that I couldn't ignore. And I met someone who was a writer, who was very bold in his decisions as well, and, like, who, like, dropped out of PhD program. Because he just didn't feel like it was his path. And just, like, having that energy around me made me realize what I actually wanted, which was not to go to law school. So one day I just sat down and sent an email to all the law schools that had accepted me saying, like, I'm withdrawing my application.
Whoa.
And I'm following this new path of writing and poetry and just trying to figure out who am I outside of immigration law, because that's what I've been doing since I was 17 years old. And I felt like going to law school would just lead me down that path, and I would never really explore what poetry would bring me, what social media activism would bring me, what speaking about Afro-Latinidad and Afro-Dominican women in the community that I had online and outside, I felt like I would be abandoning that because the school was in St. Louis in Missouri. So I couldn't do it. And my whole life, I wanted to move away from New York. And I couldn't because I was undocumented. And for the first time, it felt like I could, you know, no longer undocumented, no partner in New York, like no kids, nothing really holding me here. And I just made the decision. And now I am applying to jobs to move to LA and just trying to figure out what I'm going to do there.
Well, that's amazing. I feel like that happens with a lot of, like, people that grow up as immigrants and then they start doing work in the community. It's really hard to imagine doing something for yourself, something that, like, you just want for you. And, like, you feel like, sometimes it's hard letting go of, this is the way that I wanted to help my community, and, like, finding a different way to do it because it's how you want to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. And, like, you know, it was hard for me because I'm a first generation immigrant as well. And, you know, my family, I would be the first person in my family to be an attorney. And they had very high hopes for me. I think the hardest thing was breaking into my mom and telling her, like, no, this is what I'm going to do. And not having a plan, right? Because I figured it would be easier for her if I said, you know, instead of going to law school, I'm going to get my master's instead. As opposed to me just one day coming to her and telling her that I'm moving to LA and I don't have a job there, but that's what I'm going to do. With oh no gosh, plan.
She must have lost it.
Yeah. My mom did not take it well at first. It took a few months of breaking it down for her and explaining why it was important to me.
I changed from engineering in college, and, like, my mom, the only thing she said was just, like, oh, my God, but now I can't tell people that, like, me has una ingeniera. And I was, like, really? Like, thanks, Mom. And they're, like, what are you going to do? And I'm, like, I don't know. I'm going to figure it out. And I feel like it's so hard when you're, especially, like, when you're in college and you see all your white peers, like, they just get to figure it out. And your parents have, like, these super high expectations of you because they're like, well, we sent you to college and you got to do all these things that you're just, like, supposed to have a plan and not allowed to just figure it out.
I think there's a big cultural difference there, too. When I was actually discussing moving away and not going to law school with my friend, he said something very important. He said that, you know, when white folks go out into the world exploring and seeing what they're going to do for the rest of their lives, they always have a safety net. Mm-hmm. They have generational mm-hmm. wealth. They have a family to, like, and connections to go to when, if they ever, like, hit rock bottom. Something that a lot of immigrant children don't have because their parents are starting over here for the first time, or their parents don't have connections like, you know, people that have been here for generations do. And that was one of the scary things to do, you know, like, realizing that, like, if I fall on my face, like, if I end up hating LA and, like, struggling a lot, you know, I wouldn't be as comfortable as other people would be. I wouldn't be able to just move back. You know, like, my parents are renting my room, like, you know, I wouldn't have just, like, a place to go back to in case I fail, let's say. Although, like, I'm sure they would never close the door on me. But it's just not the same.
No, yeah. And I think that's why it's, like, it's such a brave and bold choice. And I think it's, I mean, so I'm 28, which is, like, not that old. But but I'm, like, on the other side of, like, the 20s now, like, almost in my 30s. And, I mean, I do have a child, so for me it's a bit different. But, mm-hmm. like, I just feel like you really don't have anything holding you back. And the fact that you're completely taking advantage of that is, it's, like, the perfect thing to do.
Definitely. And, you know, being undocumented a lot of the time felt like I was trapped. Trapped in New York, trapped in, like, with a limited choice on what I had to do the rest of my life. Because I'm like, how am I going to abandon my community? That's what it felt like. Like, I would be abandoning the immigrant community if I chose to do anything else. And also not being able to travel, not being able to go to college away from home, not being able to drive to other states because, you know, I didn't have documents. It felt like a lot of the time, like I was trapped in this like bubble of New York and the Bronx. And, you know, a lot of people are comfortable with staying in the same place, but I never was. I always wanted to leave. And now, you know, I met in the last few years a lot of people from California, and it just seems like it was the next step. And it feels very organic. Doesn't feel like I'm trying to force leaving or like I'm running away from anything. It just feels like this is the most logical thing to do for my spirit. And for the first time, I'm not ignoring that, or I don't have, like, you know, my immigration status over my head.
No, I completely understand. I mean, it's not 100% for me, but in the next few years, like, I want to move back to Mexico. And in a way, it's for the same reasons, because I have DACA. Like, I don't have a path to citizenship, so I'm kind of just tired of not knowing whether the next time I renew DACA is the last time I'll be able to renew it. Like, I'm tired of not knowing what I can do. Yes. And I feel like there's something calling me in Mexico. And I think there's, like, something over there for my writing. Like, I don't know. When I think of my writing, I'm like, I feel like there's something over there that I need to explore. And so what is it about LA that makes you feel like it's going to be a good place for you to explore your writing?
I think you're the first person to ask me that. I think it's going to put me out of my comfort zone. Because living in New York, like Dominican, Afro-Dominican, a lot of people look like me. A lot of people share my narrative. I have a community of people that I grew comfortable with. You know, other Dominican women. I go down the street and there's a bodega with everything that I need, a salami and plátano, queso frito, you know? And something that I learned from traveling is that the world is so vast. And I've never stepped out of this bubble. You know, I've never left my community. I've never left my mom's house. And, you know, I read Sandra Cisnero, right? I'm here, you know. That's my muse. So Sandra Cisneros, in her last book, A House of My Own, compiles a bunch of stories that she wrote throughout her life. And a lot of them talk about her decision to move away from her family at a point where that wasn't the thing to do. That wasn't tradition. And she was the only woman in her family apart from her mom. And she said that she had this, I don't even know, I'm looking for a word, bilingual problems. She had this hunger, right, to travel the world and be able to explore herself in different places, because she thought that that's what writers were supposed to do. And when I read that 3 years ago, it really, really hit me, because the reason why I was unable to write for a long time, write poetry, write creatively, was because I was not having the experiences that I could. I was very squared in college. I was very squared in high school. I was one of those, like, I must be a good girl because, you know, my mom is counting on me, you know. And it wasn't until after I graduated that I started indulging in everything I could. And that really, really influenced my writing. And that's what I feel like LA would do for me. I'm going to be out of my comfort zone. There's not going to be people there that speak like me or look like me. Or maybe, yes, people that would look like me but don't have my Dominican background. And I want to explore myself in those spaces. I want to know who I will become and who I will be when I land, and how I will deal with, yes, the microaggressions, but also how I will grow because of them.
Yeah, no, California is very interesting because it's like supposed to be very progressive, right? And very liberal. But at the same time, I don't know. I think because, like, most of the Latino population over there is Mexican, like, they have, like, if, you know, like, we've been talking about this a lot in the Instagram world, I guess, lately, because of, like, for example, right now, it just happened with, like, the World Cup and, like, the Mexican fans, like, wearing the Salvadorian flag, you know what I mean? And then also just, like, so I don't know, I find it, like, really, I mean, I went to California, not LA, but I did a summer class at UC Berkeley, so that's, like, you know, by San Francisco, And even though, like, I am Mexican, like, I'm a very New Yorker Mexican. And, like, I mean, I honestly grew up listening to bachata and merengue more than I did to, like, like, I mean, I listen to, like, rancheras and everything, too. But when we go out dancing, like, if it's not bachata and merengue, then, like, I don't feel like I want to dance as much.
Same. You know?
So I definitely, like, felt that when you go over there and you're like, oh, well, like, what am I going to do if they don't play the music that I want to dance to?
I have, like, several friends from the Bronx that are Dominican, and I've always been so, like, impressed how people there get to, like, retain so much of their culture. And I think it's because you're around so many people that are like you, whereas, like, you're here in the suburbs and you have to constantly be code switching. So I feel like, I don't know, like, I'm kind of used to always have to be code switching all the time wherever I am. And then I've talked to, like, other friends that are from the Bronx, like, that are Dominican, and they're just like, I don't understand how people act differently outside of here, because they're so used to, like, always being around people who have similar culture. So I find that interesting, too. Like, is everyone around where you live, like, also Dominican? I think you mentioned that, too, right?
Yeah, definitely. So where I live is mostly Dominican, Puerto Ricans, and African Americans. And then some, like, Guyanese sprinkled here, some Mexican sprinkled over there, like, but predominantly Dominican and Puerto Rican and Black American.
Yeah, well, I went to school in the Bronx, and I kind of, I mean,
I didn't know your school was in the Bronx.
Lehman.
Oh, yeah. I thought it
was. Lehman is, like, two stops from me. That's where my best friend
Yeah. Went. And so I went to Lehman because I grew up in this, like, really white suburbs. And I was like, I want to get away. And then, like, finally going to a place where, like, most of the people were, like, people of color, people that spoke other languages at home. Like, I love that. Like, I love getting away from here.
That's so funny. I feel like I've had the opposite upbringing. Like, I went to an even whiter school, like, in Rochester, New York.
That's
like,
you know, that's another thing. You know, me going to... I went to middle school right around my block. I went to high school Fashion Industries, which is in 23rd Street in the city. But I hung out with a lot of Dominicans. It was predominantly Dominican, Caribbeans, and, like, Black Americans. And then I went to college in John Jay, which is, you know, the CUNY, one of the CUNYs with the most Latinos in its student body. So I have never had to spend, like, a long, like an extensive amount of time around, like, white folks. Oh, I've always been in this bubble of Latinidad and people of color.
It's weird because, like, for some people, yes, it might sound like that's amazing, but to other people, it's like, but no, it's like, I don't know. It's like,
I feel like I didn't find any other Latinos until I was, like, working. And, you know, just, like, so overexposed to having to be in, like, white areas that I was just like, oh, my God, I need to, like, be around people who understand what I'm going through. Because it was, like, you know, like, you could – I mean, I could always relate to some folk, but it was not the same, like, to understand, like, your culture, your upbringing, like, why your mom does weird shit and, like – and, you know, always having to be on, you know, like, putting on your white voice kind of – that it's, like, exhausting. So I've had, like, the complete opposite experience. But, yeah, I guess it's, like, weird to me to, like, think of someone who's grown up always around people of color. And then you're just like, oh, my God, like, how do you navigate the world? Like, it's really different.
I mean, it's nerve-wracking sometimes because when I am around white folks, usually at my job, white lawyers, or, like, when I would go to these cocktail receptions for law school, definitely, like, there was a definite code switch. My voice would become, like, higher. I would be more careful with my pronunciations, but I would feel very, very uncomfortable. like everything I said sounded wrong, and I would doubt myself so much when I was speaking that I wonder what it would be like to actually go to law school and be in a room full of mostly, like, white folks.
I feel like, I mean, I started working when I was 14 at a restaurant, and then all the clientele was white people. So I feel like from a very young age, I had to learn how to, like, deal with white people, especially when you're serving them at a restaurant and you have to be all, like, nice and polite all the time.
Get used to the microaggressions.
Yeah. And I think you know, like 14. Like
they don't faze me anymore.
Well, literally 14 years later, I finally feel like I don't put up with what white people say anymore. Like I finally mm-hmm. found like the courage, like when somebody says something, like I'm like, actually, no, lady, that's not how it is. Or like I don't know. Like
I feel like even still, like I am sometimes in shock. Like, wait, did someone really just say that? Like, and I don't know how to react. Like the other day at the Taco.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my god!
We went out to eat, and it was just like a few days ago.
It was like yesterday.
Yeah, I don't know. It was Friday. Today is Sunday. So two of us got there first, and then we were waiting for Val. And then when Val walked in, the first thing they say to her was, "Are you looking for the taco lounge?"
I was like, what? And it was here, like, mind you, it was a brown girl, right? And she's just like, are you looking for the taco lounge? And I was like a seemingly super like it looked like a pretty nice restaurant, and yeah. I thought I was underdressed, and I was like, oh my god. And I walk in, and then like the other kid just pops up, and he was like, no, her friends just sat down, let me seat her. And so then I'm just like, wait, hold up, did he just assume the other brown people were my friends? And so we sit down, god. Right? And I'm just like, guys, like I don't know if like I just got profiled, is this racist? And our waitress comes over, and I was like, do you have a taco lounge? And she was like, yeah, it's right downstairs. And I was like, oh my god, I didn't even know, like, were they being racist? Was there an actual taco lounge? So it turns out there was a taco lounge. But it just was so quick that I was like, I'm so used to just like potential racism in the suburbs that I was like, was this racist? And we're all just like, I don't even know. And yeah, so
you're listening to Basic Brown Nerds, and we'll be right back.
Hey, Basic Brown Nerds, this is Joy Valerie, and I have some really exciting news for you. We have launched our merch shop, so you can go to basicbrownnerds.com/shop and rep the Basic Brown Nerd movement. And this is one of the ways that we can keep making high-quality content and bring you Season 3. Yup, we are bringing Season 3 in 2020. And know that when you go to our shop, you're not just supporting us. You are not just supporting the production of this. 100% of the profits goes back into Basic Brown Nerd so that we can bring you more episodes, but also because I want to make all of the ideas that I have a reality, events, and keep bringing you awesome content that every time you listen or see Basic Brown Nerds, you know that these are people just like you, that in this time where people are talking so much crap about us, that you know that our community is strong, powerful, resilient, that we make things out of nothing. And to be honest, that's how we started Basic Brown Nerds almost 3 years ago. We started in front of a computer and just trying to figure it out. So if you've been listening since then, thank you so much. And when you shop from Basic Brown Nerds, you're not just supporting this, you are supporting local business, local Guatemalan-owned business right here in New York. So thank you, and feel free to reach out to us on social media at Basic Brown Nerds, and also to me at Joy Valerie with two E's on Instagram and Twitter. I am low-key addicted to social media. That's literally my career. I work in media. So I'm really excited to get to know you all, but also feel free to send me any opportunities, any ways to collaborate, to keep making this bigger and keep Basic Brown Nerds going. So see you next decade in 2020.
Hey, are you a New York City Basic Brown Nerd? Are you also an entrepreneur? Do you want to be surrounded with people just like you over brunch on June 1st? Yes? Well, I'll be on a panel for the executive brunch hosted by the People CPA with the goal to envision and execute, surrounded by amazing young executives who are crushing the game. We'll be networking, enjoying gourmet meals, and an open bar. Yeah, you heard me, open bar. With gifts, giveaways, and an amazing time. So get your ticket and join me because I'll be dropping some gems alongside these panelists. Check the link in this episode description or go to bit.ly/BBNBrunchNYC, all caps. See you there on June 1st.
first thing I still remember to this day, my first encounter with like a racist microaggression. Like, you know, it was just in my face, and I was, you know, I'm usually very quick with the replies, but I was in shock, so I couldn't even say anything. So like it was like the first time that I went to a predominantly white college. I was presenting my research my sophomore year of college or junior year, something like that, and to this like Latin American studies conference in Binghamton. And first of all, like most of the presenters were like white women, and so, you know, we're in this conference, and at first we're having breakfast. And I'm here with my hair. I had just started my transition into going natural. So my hair was poofy and big. And a homegirl comes up to me, and she, like, fluffs my hair. And she goes, oh, my God, I love your hair. I'm like, oh, thank you. And she goes, I want to marry someone like you so that my kids could have kinky hair like yours.
I looked at her like I don't even know, with my mouth half open,
like wait, like did you just say that, like did I imagine this happening? And homegirl was like, she swore she was giving me a compliment, like she was like, she was out here being a sister. That's what she felt like, probably. And I'm like, homegirl, like, oh my God. I couldn't say anything. I couldn't tell her that, like, not to say that. Like, I was in shock. And I'm like, oh, someone like you, so that my kids can have kinky hair like yours. But anyway, that's when I realized that the white shenanigans were not for me.
Shenanigans?
No. And also, well, so when I invited you to come on the podcast, because I love how no-nonsense you are, especially when, I mean, no surprise here, basic brown runs, we love to talk shit about men.
People love that, and I've been trying to, you know, calm it down a little bit, because I'm like, damn, you know, I'm really petty with men, because they're always trifling.
No, they are, like, these...
But
like,
at the same time, I'm like, damn, but I also, you know, I also have a lot of compassion and kindness for men of color. I feel like that's not...
Like I have the opposite. I put up less with men of color, because I'm just like...
I've been doing it all my life.
Yeah, like, I'm just like, come on. Like, oh my God, why you gotta make, like, come on. Like, I don't know. I'm just like, why you gotta push us down even more?
I have to say, like, I think I personally... when I talk about men in general in Instagram, I'm talking about them in general, but I think when it comes to, like, when I meet them individually, like, I always give them the benefit of the doubt, and then most of them still turn out to be really
disappointing. Then they let you down.
But I was having this conversation with someone, because, like, they were also, like, looking at my Instagram, and they were also like, do you, like, hate men or something? And, like, so I just, like, started having this conversation with this guy. And I was just, like, explaining to him, like, well, in general, like, this is why I say this. And then I was like, but do I treat you like trash? And he was like, no. And I was like, exactly, because I treat you the way that you deserve to be treated because of the person that you are. But if you were giving me all this shit, then I would be treating you like that, you know?
I feel like my patient runs out fast when I'm dealing with Dominican men. I'm pretty sure you guys have noticed that. They're just a nuisance. Like, they're just...
See, do you think, like, it's because you've dealt with it all your life?
That's like, exactly it. Because I'm just saying, sometimes I see, like, non-Dominican women out here online, like, thirsty for Dominican men. I'm like, oh, no, 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 no.
So you don't know what you're getting into.
We need to have a talk.
I feel like a lot of Dominican women feel that way, too, though. Like, I have a lot of Dominican girlfriends.
And then it's, like, the most, like, demon aesthetic they could have, like, out here with the beard, and then I'm like, y'all be liking these demon-ass Dominican men.
That's so funny, because the other day I was talking, so one of my best friends, she's Dominican, and, like, there was, like, this one guy that was like, oh, he's kind of cute, and then I was, like, telling her, like, some of the things he was saying, and I was like, okay, can you please tell me, I was like, do you think he likes me, or do you think he's being Dominican, because I can't tell.
What's the word? Tigre. That's like what everybody was saying when we were, me and my friends went to the DR. They were just like, ah, es un tigre. And like,
but the thing is, like, Dominican men are very good at pursuing you.
Suave.
They
very suave.
They have game. You know, like, they will make you feel like you are, like, el ombligo del mundo. Like, you the shit, girl. I'm here for you. Like, I'm here because of you. You a queen. While they trifling on the side with a whole separate families and three baby mamas. But they're very good. And, you know, don't get me wrong. Like, Dominican men are amazing dancers. Dominican men can be very, very romantic. And sometimes they're, you know, great friends. But that's why you keep them as friends. The kind of trifling I have seen from my Dominican male friends, it's like, yeah, you're the reason. You know, and I love you. You're my homeboy, but like other women need to watch out when you're around. They have game, y'all. Please don't fall. To all the listeners, please don't fall for. If you are falling for a Dominican, come see me.
You can follow her. Give them your IG handle, girl.
Afro Dominican X Things. Afro Dominican X and Things. I need to change that long ass Instagram name.
It works though.
I love it, but at the same time, it's like I always have to like deletrearlo, like make sure that people can get there. But yeah, I just, you know, I'm just warning y'all, being a good, you know, human being.
You could like watch start an app that's like a Dominican man assessor.
I feel like, you know, I can read Dominican men very well, you know. I feel like that's a skill that I've developed over the years. So just send me a picture and some screenshots of what he's texting you, and I got you.
Yo, that's so funny because I feel like I'm the same with Mexican men. Like, one of my friends started dating a Mexican man, and I saw, like, a picture of him, and I was like, I know exactly who he is. I was like, girl.
That's my cousin. That's nice.
Probably, though, honestly. I actually, like, I feel like I'm very unique in my, like, group of friends because, like, where we live, like, a bunch of Mexicans live here, and they happen to be from, like, the same little circle of towns where I'm from in Mexico, and, like, every time I go out, we bump into somebody, my mom is like, oh, ese es tu primo, ese es tu tío, like, and I'm just like, I cannot be with a Mexican dude because I'm probably related to them, like.
Oh my god, you're the worst, like, you're the worst stereotype. No. Like, if a white person was like, do you know this Mexican person? You're like, and you'd be like, oh, how dare you? We don't all know each other. But yes, that's my cousin.
No, for real, though. Like, I am a really, I try to, like, not talk to people about that stuff. Because, like, I do love tequila. I do, like, I love spicy food.
What do you mean that, like, stuff? Your Mexican stuff?
Yeah, no, like, I try not to let them know from the get-go that I'm, like, that Mexican person that they, that, like, likes jalapenos and drinks tequila and stuff like that, you
and
know.
And sings to Chente.
I try.
Oh, my God. The first time I went to a bar in Queens, it was, like, you know, in Jackson Heights, and Vicente Fernandez started playing, and they came out with free shots.
Oh, my God. Where is this bar? Tell me.
Literally free shots when they put the ranchera.
Oh, my God. Because, like, I mean, I don't really listen to that, like, on a daily basis, you know what I mean? Like, honestly, like, when I came here in 2000, and all my cousins, like, they were all into, like, Fulanito and stuff. So, like, I grew up listening to that, to, like, merengue, like, cleaning in the house. It was, like Los Ilegales. Like, that's what they were listening to. And and I feel like I just had, like, such a New Yorker childhood, not so much, like, Mexican. You know what I mean? Because it was also, like, salsa and stuff like that. Like, it wasn't just, like, Mexican music.
The trip grew up with, like, Ana Gabriel, Amanda Miguel, all those, like, lady singers at home.
Yeah, no, I think I, like, messaged you once when you were putting up, like, some of the songs you were listening to, like, Amanda Miguel, like, El Me Mintió. Oh, my God, that song is...
That's my shit. You know what? In my feelings, 100%. Yeah, because that's what I grew up with listening at home. Like, obviously, yes, the bachata de merengue. But a lot of, like, those, like, depressing, like, I lost my man, he cheated, I want him back songs.
Maybe this is why we're just so ingrained with the men are trash. Everybody be telling us that they're trash since the beginning.
Paquita La del Barrio told me this a long time ago.
They tried to warn us.
Yo, Paquita has the best karaoke song for, like, a drunken night at 3 a.m.
Definitely. I feel like that's what I need. I just, like, need some karaoke to, like, get it out.
We need Latino karaoke.
For real, though, I've been, like, I love, like, especially, like, Latino, like what my aunt would do, like, at the family party, 3 a.m., 4 a.m., they put out, you know, the rancheras start coming out, and those are, like, depressing baladas.
Yes.
I feel like that's what I would like a karaoke to be like. When I go football playing, just out here singing at the top of their lungs.
That's what I grew up doing, and when I went to, like, a karaoke bar and all they were singing was, like,
don't stop.
Yeah. Believe. Yeah, yeah. No, I did not have fun, and I told my friend, like, all of them thought I was, like, just, like, being rude, and I was like, I am sorry, but I have very high standards for this kind of activity, and this does not live up to it.
I think this is another business opportunity, guys.
Oh my god, karaoke. We should. We some totally
karaoke Saturdays, karaoke Sundays.
But so, do you know when you're moving?
So currently, I've just been looking for jobs, and out here writing my cover letter. You know, available to relocate up when hiring.
Yes.
My fellowship ends in late August, so I'm hoping that by late August, by early September, I'm already set to leave. I don't have, I don't doubt that I will be. But honestly, I've even considered just picking up and leaving and just figuring it out when I'm there on some, like, Eat, Pray, Love.
LA version.
Dominican version. My mom and kiss my ass version.
You should write that book, though. I will read it.
What is it? I'll write it in Spanish. It'll be something along like leaving Dykeman, para Los Angeles, some bullshit like that, some Dominican, title.
And then tell us where you find salami over there, because I had a friend that from college who also Dominican from the Bronx got to Stanford Law School, and I remember she got what is that company, like Queso Tropical or something, they send her like a care package over there. I remember.
What?
Yeah.
Get them up, girl.
Yeah, they send her like a care package, and they send her like the cheese and a salami and a bunch of other stuff that she could not find over there.
Yeah, I don't think there's much Caribbean out there, no?
I mean, so there's this Instagram called Dominicans in Cali, and
there's all five of them.
Oh, 100 followers. No, so I hit the bump, and I'm like, so where do I find plátanos and salami?
It's so funny, because
I was just hitting them up as a joke. I was like, you know, I'm moving to LA, like, where do I find the plátanos and the salami? And homeboy goes, he gave me the actual, like, supermarkets and where to find plátanos. And then he was like, good luck on the salami.
Oh, no. You're going to have to hit up the company and be like, send me some.
You know what? For Christmas, what I'm going to ask my mom to do is just to, you know, put some salami in a box and, like, overnight mail.
There you go.
I'm sure there has to be. My mom, actually, they do a lot of retreats, and a lot of people come up from the Bronx, and they're mostly Dominican. So my mom had to, like, learn how to make Dominican breakfast, like, for the retreats. And there'll be, like, piles of salami in the morning.
That's what I need from Mango.
We're Guatemalan, so maybe other Guatemalans have picked it up too, you know?
I even consider starting a business over there and just selling Dominican food.
Yeah, who does that?
I really thought about that.
Yeah, I mean, come on, like, the West Coast needs, like, new food over there.
Oh my god, and then just, like, you know, like, put some bougie-ass name and then, like, make it look really hipstery.
Yeah, just be like, this is organic salami.
Organic from my fridge.
But that's really, it's a joke, but that's really how white people be out here.
Yeah.
No.
You know, this is like homemade.
Other people's cultures.
Yeah, you might as well just, like, you know, sell your own. Like, this is, like, authentically made by a Dominican in the Bronx,
AKA
me.
But then all the famous Dominicans that, like, have to live over there, they're going to be like, oh, my God, I can finally find this here. And then next thing you know, you'll be the it spot for all the Hollywood people.
Oh, my God, yes.
This is not a bad idea. You know Drake's fake Dominican ass? You know, he might find me in L.A.
Yo, I call him Drake.
Drake.
He swears. He, like, first of all, he looks like any bouncer you see on Dykeman.
Yes.
he looks like your regular bouncer on his day off. That's and so he just be out here repping Dominicans like he's one of us. They look like a Dominican uncle.
I think he thinks he's Dominican.
He's just accepted it.
Yeah, he's just like, it's in his heart or something. I don't know. Oh my God. But this was like so nice talking to you. I think before you leave, we should hang out.
And, I think like, we meet have to do person. Karaoke.
Yes.
Definitely. You know, I'm trying to like, maybe when I find it, when I finalize when I'm leaving, having like just a bash.
Let's do it.
Everyone get together for some like bachata, merengue, salsa, someone to teach me, cumbia.
So I can
pull up ready. And this ready is where the Selena comes in. Someone teach me cumbia, pues quebradita.
Oh my God, yeah.
We'll have to tell Nico too.
So that I can just go and be prepared for the you know, the clubs.
Oh yeah, cumbia is like a huge thing out in LA.
Yeah, like
they have like cumbia, what is it?
DJs?
Yeah, like DJs.
I am, you know, and that's something that I'm not used to. I've never heard cumbia like played in clubs until I started like going to Queens. I would very love to go to Queens because I'm in the Bronx. That's a 2-hour commute.
I've never been to a place where they play cumbia here. I always just go to like the places where everything is like reggaeton, bachata, merengue, salsa. Like actually for me, cumbia is like if I go to a wedding or something.
Actually, no. But only until I started going to like the Selena things. That's really it.
Yeah, but I don't know.
Just kind of
every person I follow who's from California. Every story when they go out, it's like cumbia's playing.
Yeah.
I don't know. Even though I'm Mexican, I feel like after a while I get tired of it. I mean, like,
what about bachata, merengue?
Well, here's the thing. I was like just talking about this to somebody. So my first job, it was at a restaurant and the cook was Dominican. His name is Arsenio, and he used to play the same CD by Anthony Santos like over and over and over, to the point where I hated Anthony Santos so much, and I didn't start enjoying like his music till I was like in college and hadn't worked there for a few years. Like once I had distance from him, I was finally able
it's like
to
Christmas
like
music.
Yeah, then I was finally able to like enjoy him because I only heard like the same like 13 songs by him over and over again.
Oh my God. That's the worst.
But then for me it's like I never just sat down and listened to Anthony Santos. Like, you know, that's like growing up, that's like our parents' music. But if Anthony Santos starts playing like in a party, I'm hyped. Like I'm in there.
No, yeah. For me, that's like dancing music. Like my listening music and my dancing music are like two different things. And yeah,
same.
Definitely.
100%. Yep.
Or something like I'll blast in the car while I'm driving in the summer.
Definitely. Because I'm here listening to mostly like American English music most of the time. But like a party with like just hip hop or just like house music is not my thing. Like,
no, same.
I'm not. Like, I need some bachata merengue. Some trap music. But like Latin trap from Bad Bunny.
Yes.
Oh my God, I'll have to send you. I just saw a video of Bad Bunny with a bunny.
I saw the one he dropped.
Oh my God,
what?
He dropped it?
No, he didn't see that. I just saw him petting it.
Yes, he was petting and then he dropped it.
Oh my God.
He said he watched
the video. Away from him. And then there's another video of him who just like, he's like getting out of a car and he saw a party bus parked in front of the hotel. Homeboy jumped into the party bus.
Oh my God.
If that happened to me, I would faint. Because everyone knows that's my man.
Okay, remind me to not. Yeah, everyone loves him so much. I mean, obviously, like, I love his music, but, like, I don't really watch music videos or, like, anything, so, like, I don't really know what he looks like.
He just looks like a fuckboy, kind of. Like,
he is 100% a fuckboy.
He has the fuckboy aesthetic, you know.
I'm never even attracted to, like, white Latinos. Yeah. And, like, I'm pretty sure if I knew Bad Bunny in real life, I'd be like, you know, you're not for me. But I think it's the vibe. It's
but
like, you know,
can
that's
get it for a
vibe.
Night, you know. Just do a night.
He can be added to the rotation for a little
rotation,
bit.
Rotation, yeah.
Exactly, you know.
Like, you know,
nothing
he's just
scary,
not permanent.
Nothing you bring home to your mama.
Exactly. Oh my God, well, it was so nice talking to you. And really, like, we're really excited just to, like, see where you go, because I think everyone, I think like the vibe around you is like you're gonna get really far and you're gonna make it to places. And you're going to be brunching with Sandra Cisneros on Instagram.
Like. Oh my God. Yes. Tag us. Thank when you that
so
happens. Much.
Like, I am very excited. So I need all the good vibes I can get.
Yeah. And so anyone in LA, hit her up.
Yo, for real though, if you're in LA in September, we're going to be friends.
You don't have a choice.
Just slide in my DM. You don't have a choice. We're friends now. Take me to your aunt's house. Or some, you know, tamales.
Yes.
Which I never had tamales, y'all. Can you believe
what?
It?
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
No, I thought tacos had hard shells until, like, 3 years ago.
Oh, my God.
What? I know that's...
Like, what?
All right. LA people, you gotta really do it for her. Actually, the other day, I was looking at who listens to Basic Brown Nerds, and LA is, like, top city, so they're listening, so they better be taking care of you.
And find you some salami. We know you're listening. We know you know.
Exactly. If you know a place where they're selling salami, buy me some and save it. Because I'm on my way.
Well, thank you so much. And we wish you the best. We're going to be keeping up with you. And thank you for being with us.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me. We're definitely going to get together for a bash.
Yes.
That's going to be the podcast in September.
Yes, definitely.
Discussing the bash and the shenanigans that happened.
Oh, Lord. I like it. Or not discussing them, if you know what I mean.
True.
Just what happened gonna go on the 24-hour story and that's it.
Well, thank you so much for having me, y'all.
Oh, actually, so one last thing. So Val has this thing where she loves taking out the trash, where she talks about, like, a trash man in her past. If you want to complain about somebody, you don't have to name names. You just have to say, like, what they did and why they're trash.
So this is what we do. We give them the nickname, you know, because everybody gives all the mans a nickname. And then you just, like, spew him out of your system, never to be spoken again. Just unleash out, taking out the trash. So I don't know if you want to take out a trash.
I feel like I already took them all out.
Good for you, girl.
I feel like, no, because... You know, I just, you know, I always think about this, right? A lot of the men that I have dated were shitty partners, but many of them were great friends. And when the relationship ended, what I found was that, like, they were shitty partners because they were obviously emotionally unavailable. They were out here struggling with their own bullshit that I shouldn't have been healing. But they were, you know, I learned to see them as full-blown human beings. And I can't say that I've had, like, I can't say that I have someone who I didn't forgive or someone that I didn't understand, like, why they treated me the way they did. Doesn't mean I'm going to have them in my life because they dusty. But also, like, I feel like the trash that I took out was me leaving the relationship.
Wow.
So that's it.
So
you know?
Deep. Mira, no,
I'm a single-ass woman. That's all I need. No men harassing me and bothering me.
No, yes.
Where I'm going. But yeah, thank you so much, y'all.
Yeah.
All right, thank you, and enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
Bye.
Gracias, you too.
If you have any questions or feedbacks, or if you want to submit to your version of taking out the trash, telling us about those trash men in your lives, email us at basicbrownnerds@gmail.com. Go to patreon.com/basicbrownnerds, or you could donate directly to us at Venmo at basicbrownnerds.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Basic Brown Nerds.